Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. My name is William English, and it's a welcome return for my guest this week, DJ Hybridist.
Hello, William.
Good afternoon, DJ Hybridist. I hope we can hear you a bit better than that. Try again. Say again.
Hello, William. Is
okay.
That any better?
Yeah, that's a bit better. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in. And today we intend to continue with your tribute, I suppose, to Laura Nyro.
That's right. Yes.
To clear that up, we should first of all clear up the pronunciation of Nyro. Having checked it last week, well, 2 weeks ago, we weren't quite so sure whether it was Nyro or what. But
It seems that she preferred Nyro as opposed to Nyro, which is the way it appears.
Yeah, which is N Y R O.
Yes. So yes,
having changed her name from the original Italian of N I G R O,
yes,
which was pronounced Negro,
yes.
So
although they preferred to call it
Negro,
yes.
Okay. All right.
Perhaps this all led to her love of words and wordplay, and so
it could
on.
Be. Yes. Yeah. So do you want to start us off with them?
Yes, okay. So last time I think we finished with Gonna Take a Miracle from the album of the same name, which really is the area that Laura Nyro... I'm going to find it difficult to pronounce
to,
it like
to
that.
To remember that it's Nyro, not Nyro.
Yeah. That's the area that she was very fond of, you know, the sort of de-wop, do-wop,
Die-wop.
songs which she sort of grew up with, hearing on the radio and so on, and which she used to perform with her girlfriends in the subways and other sort of cavernous environments where the acoustics were amazing. So she never lost this love of the music that she grew up with, and you know, sort of call and response, that sort of thing. So we're going to...
Well, it's Gonna Take a Miracle being what, a classic track from when? Do you remember who did it? Was it the Royals or something? Or
yes, we did mention that last time.
Yeah.
It's written by somebody. Once again, you've caught me on the hop.
Sorry. Well, maybe we should launch straight into a track. Should we start with a track?
Well, yes, I think that's what we're doing here. We're going to start, as I think she always integrated these doo-wop type songs into her, you know, right to the end of her life, she was still recalling those days.
Mm.
This is from a sort of bonus CD which came with a sort of facsimile put together compilation effort called a songbook, which is full of sort of...
If you pass me the book, I can quickly...
Yeah.
Okay. So
the Art and Soul of Laura Nyro.
So since our last programme, we've acquired Time and Love, The Art and Soul of Laura Nyro, which includes a three-song CD of previously unreleased tracks and excerpts from Laura's journal. So we're a little bit... Sort of, we have some extra. Oh, it's published by the Cherry Lane Music Company. You can get it on the internet.
Okay. So, as I say, this came with these previously unheard before. I don't know how this comes to be, but presumably the keepers of her estate are releasing things.
Yeah.
You know, a bit like a photographer who didn't release certain photographs during her lifetime. And this is, as I say, this is an old song. It's called, this is the one we're going to hear. It's called This Is Dedicated to the One I Love, which was written by two people I've never heard of before, one called Loman Pauling and Ralph Bass in 1957.
Mm-hmm.
It was previously performed by the Five Royales, the Shirelles, and the Mamas and Papas. But as always, I would say this, wouldn't I? She brings something completely new.
Yeah.
Come
before I go to bed, my baby.
Okay, well, that's obviously a live recording. Is that,
yes,
Japan
we said that. Yes, a live recording in Japan in 1994.
Right.
She is amazing. She's even greater still when she's live.
Yeah.
She obviously has a great relationship with the audience and they with her.
Yeah.
And she always does something different. You know, so many of these recordings, a lot of the recordings she did more than once.
Right.
And each interpretation is somewhat different.
Yeah, and we did. There is a book, the Music and Passion of Laura Nyro, Soul Picnic by Michelle Court, which is probably the standard book on her.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And with regard to that, I've skimmed through the book since we last did this program. You've obviously read it more extensively than I have, but there was a suggestion. Well, some of the information is that she regularly played. The Bottom Line, which was this place in New York.
Yes, it would have been nice to have played some stuff from that.
Yeah, and apparently she would go back there sort of every Christmas. I think Christmas Eve she would do a concert there.
I wish I'd been there.
And one of the, there was, as they describe in the book, there's one occasion where she plays Let It Be Me. And it apparently reduced the table of men to weeping.
Yes, yes, so. I think we've got that. Yes, actually, we've got that on the final.
Oh, right.
Her final CD.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got her singing that.
So there obviously is a very poignant quality to her performances and voice, which kind of strikes to the heart of some people.
Yes, if you're that way inclined, she certainly goes straight there.
Well, indeed, yes. Are you that way inclined?
Yes. That's the beauty of music, and her music in particular, yes.
Is it, would you say there's a sort of melancholic strand throughout everything she did? Or?
Well, the strange thing is, yes, there is, but the strange thing is there's still that joyous feeling.
Right.
She somehow imbues it and lifts you up again.
Yeah, that's true. It's uplifting
rather
than being...
It is tragically sad.
Right.
But
whilst
at the
being
same time,
uplifting as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes.
Which, of course, is your theme of joy and pain, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yes. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so well, we're not going to, we're not really going to be too chronological, are we? We can duck and dive.
Yes,
and,
I think so. Yeah. So on that very note, actually, I think we're going back to the CD that we've heard first last week, which is the compilation CD called "The Best of Laura Nyro."
Right.
And listening to that again, there are a couple of tracks there because we've vaguely you asked about her relationship last week too,
oh, yeah.
and with other musicians and so on. Mm. I think there are two tracks here that illustrate just what an incredible ensemble list she could be too.
Uh-huh.
The first one on side two of this particular CD is called "Money."
Oh yeah.
And this is live as well, so that's another great one. So if we could hear that next, that
would
be great.
Should we just play that then?
Yeah.
We'll play that and then we'll sort of...
I'm not afraid to die.
Okay, so that was recorded in 1976 in New York, released June 1977. Producer Laura Nero. And let's mention some of the musicians on here, if I can read this small writing on this CD notes. Okay, Laura Nero, vocal and piano. John Tropia, electric guitar. Mike Manier on vibes. Andy Newmark, drums. Richard Davis, bass. Nidia Liberty Mata on congas and percussion. And C.C. Collins on second percussion. And these are all tracks from, that track was from the Best of Laura Nero, Stone Soul Picnic. I'm still saying Nero. I can't get out of that.
So that was a good example, too, of, you know, other elements of her background. She was very interested in jazz and so on. You've got those vibes there, you know, like Gary Burton, I suppose, was
right.
that sort of sound. And she's very interested in John Coltrane, Miles Davis. You've got that really up-tempo jazz funk thing that was very, I suppose, I don't know when that started, really. Mm. But anyway, so you've got that in there, and you've got her collaborating with a whole lot of really interesting sounding musicians.
She was a big fan of Miles Davis as well.
Miles Davis,
who gets mentioned in this in the book.
Yeah, I think she met Miles. I don't know if they worked together.
Right.
So we're going to play Mr. Blue from this same CD.
Oh, yeah. So this is basically the next track.
Yeah, the next track.
Also recorded 1977. This isn't a live track.
No.
But it seems to be virtually the same lineup of musicians.
Right, okay.
Should we just go with that then?
Yeah.
Too.
Okay, you're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. Today's show is with DJ Hybridist and her selection of tracks by Laura Nero. And that was recorded in 1977, released June 1978, Mr. Blue from The Best of Laura Nero. Stoned Soul Picnic.
I chose that one because it really, it demonstrates her playful and her humorous side. And it's also, it's better than any amount of sort of interviewing with her and so on. All of the words are to do with the things she was interested in. You know, it's a fantasy song, you know, singing to somebody in the sky.
Yeah.
It's about animals and space travel, fantasy, you know, earth calling you.
Yeah.
You know, it's just such a great line. It's about peace. It's about an arrogant male, apparently.
Yes.
And how he can't be cool, you know, his arrogance is getting in the way of being anything to do with being, you know.
And it clues 77? Who could that have been?
1977. Oh, for her, you mean?
Yeah.
I don't really know, but this marriage of hers was, I think, over by before that, anyway.
She sort of dropped out of music, didn't she, for a while?
She had a child.
Yeah, I think it's guy David Bianchini.
That's right, yes. She just had the one child.
Who was described, he was apparently some kind of ubermensch, sort of Vietnamese special operative or something. He was the kind of guy that was dropped behind lines in Vietnam and almost like a commando. But then
See why they wouldn't get it on.
But he had a kind of hippie mentality as well, which must have been a bit odd.
Confusing. And confusing.
The parents warned her off getting involved with him. He bought a Mercedes on her credit card and things
this. Well, that's enough, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And then they sort of had this one child together.
Yes.
And then she sort of came back into music.
She had several periods when she did that. She sort of lay low for a bit and then came back and so on.
Yeah.
And I think somewhere I saw, you know, she didn't have the success of other people she met. No. Disappointed. And then there was this famous situation, apparently, the Monterey Jazz or Pop Festival in the, I think it was way back in 1967 or something. Mm-hmm. She thought the crowd didn't like her.
Oh, really?
And there were, apparently, because it was a hippy-dippy kind of environment, she looked at odds with all of that, you know, the grand piano and sort of a long black dress, which was not sort of, you know, it wasn't paisley or it wasn't patterned in the right way. So she would, and then singing these songs, I don't know.
I think she also makes reference to, she played in London certainly once at the Union Chapel in Islington.
That's right, yes.
I don't know if she played any big venues. I mean, was she big over here? Did she kind of get, you know, large audiences?
No.
So that's okay. I just thought I'd quickly read a bit from the book, just a quick paragraph. This is from the book The Music and Passion of Laura Nero, Soul Picnic by Michelle Court, which I think was published in about 2002. And despite the excitement she engendered, Nero was conflicted about performing. On one hand, she battled fear and self-doubt. On the other, she was willing and quite able to create an hypnotic musical seance. She even admitted once to an interviewer that since she had a dramatic flair, a little, not too much, she harbored a fantasy of doing something really remarkable at the piano during a concert. And then the quote by her is, "I want to stop in the middle sometime," she said, "and pick up one of the piano keys, have it made out of sugar or something, and eat it." So, okay, moving on. What's the next?
Okay, so we'll move on now to, I think we actually did play a track from this last time, and it was where we got sort of a bit, or at least I got a bit bogged down in this business of cats and animals
and so on.
And what I would like you to do, if you haven't already done so, maybe, is, you know, you might have some tracks that you want to play, I don't know, have you?
Yeah, possibly.
The issue here.
Yeah.
Perhaps you could choose on my behalf to play the one that's actually got a cat in the title.
What, one of the animal tracks?
That I haven't heard.
Well, I listened to, I out of the various CDs, I found three which seemed to refer to animals in some way. But it struck me that there was one called Tomcat or Tomcat something or other.
Right.
Which is obviously a metaphor for some relationship. It's not so much about the cat.
Okay.
It sort of goes on to talk. When she talks about the tomcat, you know, wandering the streets or something, she's obviously talking about some guy that where it went wrong or something.
Yes.
So I don't know. Pick one out later, but want to play track? This is from New York Tenderberry.
Yes. So if we just avoid the cat track
for a while whilst I think about it.
Okay, and if maybe the next two that you've got there somewhere.
Yeah, so this is Time and Love.
Yeah.
Is that from New York Tenderberry?
Yes, it is,
okay. Yeah.
And I was just looking at the CD notes from the compilation album. There's quite a good interview inside this one by somebody called Paul Zolo, who is a songwriter and author and the editor of something called Song Talk, the Journal of the National Academy of Songwriters. And he asks Laura Nero this question. When images come to you during writing, is it necessary for you to completely grasp their meaning? And she says, it's almost like when you're you're writing, you're catching sparks. You don't have a lot of space to go on forever in the literal way. You're creating some imagery and some pattern that says it, but in a different kind of space. So she's going somewhere else in her mind completely. And
yeah.
Just like you do when you're writing poetry or any creative act really is... requires you to go elsewhere, really,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
There was. She had a connection with Sondheim, didn't she? Sort of. A tenuous link with Stephen Sondheim.
Yes, I should look into
and
that.
And she must have been brought... Obviously, she was brought up in New York, the Bronx district.
Yeah, but
at that time,
Sondheim was... I mean, it's only recently that Sondheim is even credited with the lyrics to West Side Story.
Oh,
so,
really?
You know, he wouldn't have... I don't know how much she would have known about him as a teenager, because, as
right.
I say, it's,
yeah.
it's only recently. When you look at the credits for... West Side Story, it's all Leonard Bernstein.
Right.
That's the big name.
Yeah.
And it's only later, when you start to look into Sondheim, you discover that those fantastic lyrics, political, you know, it's a political piece, were written by him.
Right.
So I don't think his notoriety would have been that great
okay.
in her early days.
She was photographed, I mean, she. But last time we mentioned there was this...
She
was photographed in his flat and so
yeah.
on. But I'm just saying that kind of, this odd juxtaposition of lyrics, the way you just throw in something...
Well, it's a daring. It's daring to do that.
Yeah.
It requires, in his case, he's incredibly clever and he wants to do something different. In her case, she's clever and she's got this amazing musicality.
Yeah. And there's a bit here from the same book. It says, as Nero one raves as a performer, other artists continue to steal her thunder on the record charts. The next big hit of a Nero tune wouldn't be sung by a pop group, but by uber diva Barbara Streisand. I'm not sure which one they were referring to there. Didn't she do... God, what was it?
She did Stone Soul Picnic.
She probably did, didn't she?
But I can't imagine what that sounded like. I mean,
no.
I have liked Streisand's voice on certain
well,
songs.
She also has that tremendous range, doesn't she?
She does, yes. She doesn't have comedy in her voice. She doesn't have humour. She doesn't have the facilities. She doesn't have the same facilities.
Right.
I don't think, does she?
Right.
She has great humanity and warmth.
Right.
And depth.
Yeah.
She has depth, definitely.
Okay.
But
right.
I'm not sure how humorous she is as
right.
a performer
no.
or
okay.
singer.
All right.
So the next one on this will be the title track, which is New York Tenderberry.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. All right.
New York Tenderberry, Blueberry, Russian rum of brush and drum, and the past is a blue note inside. Love.
Now I'm back.
New York, tender berry here, true berry, I lost one.
So that's the title track from New York Tenderberry.
That's right. Yeah, apparently that was written. That comes from 1969.
Yeah,
and in this, but going back to this interview, she says that this was her very wild time of exploration. And the interviewer says the key line of this one seems to be, "You look like a city, but you feel like religion to me." And then she says, "Yeah, well, you know, for most of my life, I've really spent more time with the trees, but I'd love to go into the city. I have soulful friendships there, and in the summertime, in the sidewalk cafes in New York, people are speaking different languages at the tables around you, and I relate to that international flavour. But I think, you know, you can almost—it's almost like a painting. You can almost see flashes of colour and fireworks, and the way she intersperses." The words and so on.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read a bit more from the other book.
Okay.
This chunk is quite interesting or revealing, I think. "Unfortunately, Nero's enduring originality continues to be overlooked in places where she should be part of the canon. She's neither a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nor the Songwriters Hall of Fame."
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt now. She is now apparently in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. She was suggested by Bette Midler, of all people. I believe she is there now.
Oh, really? Okay.
So this predates,
so this is a bit out of date now then. She was also ignored at Lilith Fair, the Women's Music Festival, whose first incarnation occurred the summer after her death. By all rights, the festival should have been dedicated to Nero, but her name wasn't even mentioned, though her legacy was everywhere present in the poetic songs of Paula Cole, Jewel, and Lilith Fair's founder, Sarah McLachlan. At a remove of 30 years, most of these singers had not been directly influenced by Nero, but by her acolytes, so they remained oblivious to her pioneering role. And it goes on. Any woman who soared to emotional heights on a less than perfect voice or dared to be a woman musician rather than a lady or a girl owes Nero a tremendous debt. Adds Nero scholar Patricia Rudden, Laura Nero and Joni Mitchell divided the world between them in 1968. 30 years later, you can trip over all the female singer-songwriters. All right. I haven't got round to finding the cat or dog tracks.
Well, maybe...
I don't think we need them.
No. No. I think we'll just have to leave any listeners that there are to find their way to the animals.
So
we're going on to the CD now, Christmas and the Beads of Sweat, which is from 1970. Dwayne Allman is on this one, and is Alice Coltrane on harp.
Okay. So it looks like we're not going to have time to get even to Angel in the Dark.
No, it doesn't.
Which is such a great
CD. It is, and also this live at Carnegie Hall.
Live at Carnegie Hall. It seems to me like there's going to be a third program at some point.
Would you like to invite me back then?
Some point down the line. Yes,
okay.
Indeed. Yes.
Okay.
So we'll have to do a part three.
Okay.
So let's, at the moment, let's stick with Christmas and the Beads of Sweat.
Yeah.
Interesting sort of juxtaposition there.
Mm.
She did obviously have a religious element. There's often religious sort of hints, aren't there, in lots of the tracks?
Yes, Eli and God, and that's actually Tenderberry, was it? She's talking about God.
She does, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And on obviously in this one, the Christmas one, I mean, the final track on this one is called Christmas in My Soul.
Right.
And it ends with the lines, Christmas in My Soul. She repeats it sort of like three times and then Joy to the World and so on. She had a sort of Catholic background somewhere?
Well, I suppose on her Italian side.
On the Italian side, but the Russian Jewish on the other side. So it's
quite a heady mix.
Yeah, indeed.
But obviously she's just very soulful.
Yeah.
Naturally soulful.
All right, well, let's play a track from... I must admit, I really did like the first track on this, which is called Brown Earth, but...
Well, we should play that then, if you want to choose that.
Can I choose that one?
Yeah.
Just to jump out of the... because I didn't get to choose my cat or dog track.
No.
So, all right, let's...
Morning came to the windows of the street, selling red watermelon, 5 cents a piece. Near a boat on the river, freedom, fresh dreams to deliver.
Well,
yes, I like that one. It's just it's always difficult to choose, you know, to make the final cut, as it were.
Do we know anything about the harmonics? She was sort of very much into the harmony element. The sort of she chose to sing with Patti LaBelle, didn't she? At one point,
well, she's made a whole. You know, obviously that's where she started. You know, she started the doo-wop. Is that form, isn't it? You know, like one singer will take one part and then the others kind of group around and so on. So that was never lost.
Right,
that always remained the sort of
interesting. Well, just one of the other my memory of the book. One of the first records she mentions having influenced her or having bought was "Bye Bye Love" by the Everly Brothers.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember.
Which,
seeing,
of course, their two voices are extremely. Extraordinary harmonic quality.
Well, almost as if they are one being. In their case, it is exceptionally. They are like one person almost, aren't they? It's really odd.
It's beautifully a very odd. Unusual kind of combination. Okay, so what's. What's next?
We better. So, Beads of Sweat, then, the title track.
Yeah.
And then, if we've got time.
Well, you've got the. Oh, I see. Beads of Sweat is. Yeah, I see. Fine.
Because we've snuck one more in there.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, and then we'll take it from. We'll see what how much time we've got left.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, you've been listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. This week it was with DJ Hybridist, paying tribute to Laura Nero, part two of an ongoing, possibly endless series, moving towards Angel in the Dark eventually.
Yep.
As her, that was, what was that one?
This is Beads of Sweat.
That was Beads of Sweat from
yes.
the LP, from the CD Christmas and the Beads of
and
Sweat.
And I presume that was Duane Allman.
That was Duane Allman on
yeah.
guitar.
Yeah.
She died when? 1997?
Yes.
We could probably say more about that next time.
Yes, yes.
But it does briefly, it says, a number of memorialists assessed her place in pop music history, with Stephen Williams in Newsday ranking her in importance with Bob Dylan and Joni Mitchell. In the Boston Globe, Steve Morse characterised Nero, along with Mitchell and Carole King, as among the first singers to write in an authentic women's voice.
Yay.
After years of industry decrees
Yay.
That men write for them.
Yay!
So perhaps we should finish on that note.
Yeah, perfect note, perfect note.
And you want to play, what's this last
well,
track?
Well, we're going out on the glorious Carole King and Jerry Goffin, Up on the Roof.
Right, okay. Thank you. Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Listening.
Thank
you for coming in, DJ Hybridist.
Thank you.
Fresh and sweet.